if we were able to peer into what the future is to create a society where everyone feels more included, I think the conversation needs to go to the tax system. But is negative gearing the right tax to actually pick on, or is that just really silly? Welcome to the Urban Property Investor. I'm your host, Sam Saggers, here to help you crack the code of real estate wealth. Today's show, another code cracker. Yes, it's time to crack the code of Australia's housing system. I want to crack it. I've got some ideas. But of course, right now, we've got pesky politicians, angry pesky politicians, pointing the finger at property investors for providing housing to renters and suggesting it's time to get rid of negative gearing. Once again, it comes up every single year. And of course, most recently, those annoying little green creatures have pointed the finger. They seem angry, don't they, those little greenies? Yes, they're like receptionists at medical centers. I think the angriest people in the world are members of the Greens Party and also medical reception people. I was at the medical center dropping my wife there, had a little chat. My God, are they just dull people, medical receptionists? They do not seem happy. Is that because the system is broken? The medical system is broken? Too many people coming in for a medical procedure? Is that what is going on, that you can't smile inside a medical center? Why is everyone so sad in there? I don't know. Maybe it's just the ones I attend. But hey, today we're getting into it. We're going to strip back the Australian real estate system. We're going to have a good old-fashioned chat. I can't wait to do today's show. But hey, welcome back, regulars. Thanks for tuning in. And of course, if it's your first time tuning into the show, wow. What a treat. Welcome aboard. Remember, here at the Urban Property Investor, we like to play the show in double speed. Get your life back. And of course, all the episodes are lessons on real estate. So if having a waffle about Australia's real estate system sounds boring and uninspiring, turn me off. Go back in time. Find an episode that may actually rock your boat. But let's get into it. I think really when it comes to the idea of political agendas these days, it seems to be like crowdsourcing. You almost throw an idea out there, hope it sticks. And of course, the Greens are really throwing the idea out there that it's all Australian property investors' faults as to why properties are more expensive than they once were. And of course, here in Australia, the average middle-class Australian owns real estate, and sometimes their real estate's worth $2, $3 million. And of course, in what planet is a middle-class human being owning $3, $4 million assets? Well, the planet of Australia. And of course, Australia's had the wealth effect for a very long time. Over the last many moons, we've created a lot of wealth, and you have to go back really to a proper recession, which dates back to 1993. In fact, when I left school, unemployment in Australia was 12%. It's a real fair income recession. Since then, we haven't really had a downturn which has reset the economy. And of course, the Australian economy, if you like, has created this continuous wealth effect whereby the change in asset values, particularly in real estate, has had a direct impact on how individuals spend and how an economy has grown. And Australians have a lot of wealth, but a lot of it is also perceived wealth. A lot of it is actually within their housing. However, really, the Australian economy, if you like, is very much connected to Australian real estate. Australian real estate is now a $10 trillion asset class, by far and wide the biggest, bigger than the share market, dwarfs it, bigger than our superannuation system, absolutely dwarfs that as well. But for a lot of people in society, they don't like where the trend is headed, where really home ownership is dropping in Australia and rental for life is rising. And so we're at a crossover point, which is getting closer and closer to the point where really new owners are becoming less of a thing, and people are renting for life. And of course, if you go back just 30 years, back to say 1995, something like 71% of Australians were homeowners, and now that's dropped to closer to 66%, which doesn't sound like much, but actually from a percentage then to person ratio, that's quite a lot of change. And of course, people are now renting for longer and entering home ownership later in the piece. And today, of course, there are now people that will rent for their entire life. Now, here in Australia, the idea of that is very politically divisive. And of course, politicians have their version of the world, and individuals have another version of the world. The government needs taxes to create a society. That is irrefutable. And arguably, Australia is undertaxed in the wrong spaces. And if we were able to peer into what the future is to create a society where everyone feels more included, I think the conversation needs to go to the tax system. But is negative gearing the right tax to actually pick on, or is that just really silly? Let's have that conversation. Of course, government's got constraints on it, and things aren't perfect. If you look at the age pension, which is a tsunami coming to Australia because of an aging population, it's a real problem. If you look at Australia, it's a very, very wide continent. It's got infrastructure demands, and I often think we have very weak infrastructure here in Australia. Urbanization is a real thing inside of our major cities. There's a lot of things to look after: energy, health, resources, security, and of course, Australia's climate response. But what happens is when people don't feel equal, you get this polarization effect. And really today, there is a have and have not world. It's already happened. I've said this openly. You can go back to the start of my podcast. I said this would happen, and it's finally happened. There are haves and there are haves nots. And that's the capitalist world. And again, you could sort of polarize just about any topic. Talk about work. You could say there's the elites that make a ton of money and pay themselves extreme bonuses. And then you've got people at the other end of the spectrum that literally are working part-time jobs. You could look at how people value, really, are they globalists? Are they nationalists? Do they want free trade? Do they want preservation of trade? Are they expansionists, or do they prefer constraints? Everything's always going to be polarizing, and Australian real estate has become a very polarizing conversation, certainly for the political world. It's an easy football to kick, particularly property investors, because they really don't have a voice. There is no voice for property investors. And so today I wanted to create a little bit of a voice so that maybe someone in power may hear the way to solve the problem. But I tell you what, it is argued that Australian economics is, it's effectively a bit of a Ponzi scheme, right? And I think when we actually dig into the real problem in Australia is we need to adjust the tax system, and we also need to fix our industries within Australia. We need to create more industry. We can't have an industry reliant upon Australian real estate, of which it is. Now, I talk about this a lot, the FIRE economy. The FIRE economy is just an economy which is designed around finance, insurance, and real estate. How you sell more finance, insurance, and real estate is you create a bigger population. That population comes into your economy. It pays more tax, so government loves it because they're in on the racket. And of course, your big job centers spin off finance, insurance, and real estate. And so really Australia's business model, if you like, is you bring more people to the country, you get them into education. They eventually come out of the education system. They've got 40 years ahead of them of paying tax, which is just great because you haven't had to cover their expense as a child to go through the system. They've also paid their way through university. And off the back of that, you then get them into the system. The local jobs market, which is connected about finance, insurance, and real estate. They then buy a house. Then you need someone to construct that house. Then you need someone to create a road to that construction. Then on that road, there needs to be some retail shops. So then the retail shops are created. Then someone needs to lease those retail shops. Of course, you get the local gym, the local chiropractor, the local Thai takeaway, and you create an economy that circulates off the back of that. Then Australia's biggest companies invest in that model. Wesfarmers then goes, wow, I'm going to start a Bunnings because now we have a catchment of people we can sell services to and products. And so Australia's model is that, because if you actually look at the industry share of output of key sectors, 12.8% health and education, 7.1% construction, people building stuff, and finance is 7.4%. Collectively, when you add those three together, there's something like close to 30% of the economy is a FIRE economy. Bring more people here, start more coffee shops, sell them more houses, get more daycare going, have more house problems so people go to Bunnings, and then you create all these jobs. This is our sector of employment. And so the government's always got a bit of a problem because most people's jobs are connected to the system. And one could argue, really, to change the system, you either have to change the model at the top, which is effectively more people coming into the system, which is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. But if you change that and you have no other industries, then it's people's jobs that will suffer. And so at the moment, we don't want people's jobs to suffer, so we put up with higher property values. And really, that is the concept. And of course, behind the scenes of that, government treats real estate as a bailout asset class. It will bail it out. And it bails it out through economic measures. Now, some do argue if you keep looking after the real estate market, you'll never create other industries. Now, if you're an investor, a private investor, and you thought about, well, what asset class is going to be protected, you could look at real estate or you could look at small business. So have a look at small business. Let's say you had a couple of hundred grand and you thought about opening a laundromat because it's a simple business to run. It could be quite cash flow positive. But then you go, you know what? If there was a downturn in retail, there's really no bailout for the local laundromat. I'm going to go into real estate. Real estate is a safe asset class because the government and the FIRE economy are in on it. It's a bailout asset class. Hence why I've always invested in pricing power assets because they carry with them the concept that the whole economy is rigged around it. And again, if we were to take the laundromat concept a little bit further, in America, where real estate is run a little bit differently, where predominantly they have 30-year fixed rate loans, so no one's ever really changing the mathematics on the loan every single month like we do here, there's a lot more capital for people to invest outside of real estate. And then you get far more ventures going on into bigger and better things, bigger and better industries. Of course, in America, you've got some amazing, the world's biggest companies like Amazon, Google, Apple. These are all tech giants because people inside of America can effectively consider that their real estate economy is not a bailout economy. So they'll go into other things. And of course, the American real estate market never got bailed out during the GFC. It lost like 30%. And again, because Australia really needs to reinvent industries, it uses real estate as the industry which creates the wealth effect. And of course, you know, just go back to COVID, right? Really, there should have been real estate which was 30% off. But the government stepped in and saved the big rock of the economy and in fact created actually price growth through inducing the marketplace to buy into real estate. And really, the government was so worried about the fact that the construction sector could slow right off. They looked at that sector and said, we've got to keep that going because it's such a pillar of our economy. Let's do things like home builder to induce work. But of course, the adverse effect of that is higher prices. Government leads to higher prices. The reason we have high property values today in Australia is not because of property investors, it's because of government. It's because of the output system of government. Now, if you look at the 10 most profitable industries in Australia, you can Google this. Number one most profitable industry in Australia is finance. Finance in Australia, most profitable. Second most profitable, super funds, which is just a form of finance. Three, financial assets investing in Australia. That's the third most profitable industry. So when you make a profit, you pay tax. And tax goes to government and government runs the system. So if you look at the biggest industries in Australia, the biggest industry is state government administration. So you've got finance, super, and financial asset investing paying for state government administration in Australia. That's the system. Then if you look at the 10 largest corporations in Australia, it's not Apple, Amazon, Google, Tesla that are effectively have nothing to do with the finance economy. They are the Commonwealth Bank. They are Macquarie. They are Wesfarmers, who's just all through the fire economy. They are ANZ, National Australia Bank, Westpac. Other than CSL, which is a medical company, you've got only mining companies and fire economies companies in the system. So the government causes prices to rise. And they can do that through things like QE, quantitative easing, which we saw in COVID. They can do it through silly infrastructure investment, where instead of builders building homes for a more affordable rate, there are no builders because they're all building an airport somewhere, or they're building, you know, a new road somewhere. And so government is a big part of the problem. If they don't manage it well, it creates price change. And of course, the tax system is a big structure of government. But if you think of why properties are more expensive, firstly, government is terrible at zoning. They're terrible at it. They're terrible at a local government level getting development applications approved. They're terrible at a state government. Like, absolutely too slow, too many rules, and the rules and that framework create price acceleration. Government is the problem. If you look at too much infrastructure development, it's effectively created price growth. Free riding. Now, I talk about this a lot. Now, again, I'm a property investor, so I like making money. I don't like the fact that government is a bailout economic piece of the real estate economy. That is, for me, a great tick to become a property investor. But I talk about it because for a lot of people, they want an egalitarian society where effectively everyone's just happy. And really, you can't point the finger at property investors unless you understand the full system. Really, today, I just want to point out the system, because if you actually want to restructure the system in Australia, you should take that to an election and you should win it at an election. And I'm happy to pass on how you can actually do it, because I don't think anyone knows how to do it. I'm here to tell you, I'm happy to provide a solution. But again, regulation creates more price growth. And so what happens is you've got the biggest industry in Australia, state government administration. You know, instead of streamlining regulation, they create more regulation because they're now a big industry. So you get this kind of bureaucracy effect of market capitalism. And again, it's all linked to idiotic policy. You can go back. You don't have to do an ancient history lesson here. Go back to when APRA interjected, one of the horsemen interjected and basically put a cap on lending, right? It was like, you know, property investors, we, you know, shouldn't exist, make it miserable for them to be a property investor and they'll go away. And of course, all that did was that was a leading decision for a lag effect, of which today there are not enough houses for renters. And again, the Greens come out and say, let's pick on property investors. The one people, the one group that is providing houses and roofs over people's heads, the one group, let's remove their tax incentive. Now, the Australian property investment industry is built off Keynesian economics. The idea in Australia that really it is a bailout concept is really connected to the type of people who are property investors. I think property investment is the wrong word, and I say this openly. Most people I deal with are not property investors. They are property savers. They are simply saving for their retirement. They're not doing extraordinary, you know, property developments and flipping things and doing all this fangled crazy stuff like on the block. No, that is not what most people are doing. Most people are simply lessening the burden to the system instead of relying on the pension when they're older, simply parking one property aside as their investment for their retirement. They are doing society a favor. And to label them as some sort of problem, I find really quite disturbing. Now, again, for most property investors, they choose property because they know it's a bailout economic class. They know that government intervention will play a part. They know that the government is part of the system. And again, true property investors and true capitalists would probably prefer the Friedman School of Economics, the idea of free market advocacy, the idea that government shouldn't be involved, that real estate should be not a command-led economy, but a free market economy. And again, like, really, like, most property investors would not invest if it was actually a free market economy, which is the oxymoron of this whole thing, because most property investors are really just savings investors. They're not property investors. So go back to COVID. If the government didn't intervene with Keynesian economics and there was Friedman economics, free market advocacy, then me as a professional property investor could have bought people's properties 30, 40% off because they wouldn't have had a job. The government would have stepped in and paid for their job, and there wouldn't have been mortgage pauses and things like that. And so the market could have been a free market economy. And in a free market economy, you would have seen a far more boom and bust environment here in Australia. However, we don't have a free market economy in Australian real estate. Let's be clear about that. We have a command-led economy, a government-led economy which protects the asset class. And again, that's one of the reasons I love Australian real estate. It is the way it is. And instead of picking on, I guess, the people providing the houses and demonizing property investors, actually, if you want to have a debate at a top level, then have the real debate is what I'm saying. That's the purpose of today's show. Don't just create a silly little notion that by giving $8,000 tax relief to a property investor, you're going to fix a system which is an industry-based system around FIRE economics. So if you were to go and remove private landlords, who's going to provide the house? Is it government or is it superannuation funds? Well, let's think that through. Let's go, okay, well, government's going to provide social housing. Well, who gets paid? Where does the government get the money from? The government gets the money from your taxes. And so whichever way you strip it back, taxes need to pay for housing. If you want more housing, and particularly more social housing, you can either do that through the current system or you can do that through an undertaxed space. And again, I don't know who's going to provide the homes, because currently the only thing that works in Australia, build to rent isn't working yet, social housing isn't working yet. The only thing that works is property savers buying real estate. And I'm not going to call them property investors because they only own one property and they don't want a Friedman free marketplace. They just want a safe nest egg in their retirement. So the other obviously big thing is if you don't have people saving for their retirement, you've got a bigger problem down the track of the pension time bomb. And the pension time bomb is a real thing. Go look at what happened in Greece when people did not save for their retirement and all of everyone started to retire at the same time. It collapsed the economy. Today in Argentina, you know, people were promised so much retirement funds and they've just had to be slashed because people didn't self-fund their retirement. 90% of the world really has no old age pension lined up. Here in Australia, the beautiful thing is property savers, as opposed to property investors, are lining themselves up to look after themselves in retirement. And remember, the system is rigged around the world whereby there's going to be an aging population. In 1965, workers looked after one retiree. By 2032, workers will look after one retiree. So it's real, right? And here in Australia, there's around 2 million Australians that own an investment property. Around 1.2 million of them, negative gear, their investment property. The average deduction for the negative gearing per annum is $8,700, according to the Australian Tax Office. $8,700 to provide a roof over someone's head. And to me, that isn't a wealthy class of people. That, again, if you know, you go back to some of the commentary from the Greens, is property investors are wealthy, greedy, you know, people. Of that 1.2 million Australian property investors that negatively geared, there's around 800,000 with a taxable income below $80,000. These are just property savers. They're not property investors, is what I'm saying. They're not like professional investors. They're just saving to get ahead, to lessen the burden on all of us. And so I think they should be encouraged. I think they should absolutely be encouraged. Property creates a lot of tax. The system creates a lot of tax. Some recent statistics, $683 billion created from real estate. $683 billion. Remember, property is propping up the public servant system. That's a ton of billions being pumped into the system. And again, if you want to change the system, in my mind, you've got to change the tax system. It's central to the whole process. It's central to the whole process. Now, Mark Burras came out with some pretty good versions of changing the tax system. In America, you don't necessarily have some major like cost prices in American real estate. You certainly have some pricey places like New York and stuff. But ultimately, there are some fairly priced places. Of course, America is, you know, has the Mississippi River flowing down the river middle of it. So it's got some great usable land, whereas Australia's got a big desert in the middle of it. But one thing that happens in America is they have a 30-year fixed rate property system. So you just get one loan. You know what you're in for every week. And whether the inflation goes up or down, your interest rate's not necessarily changing whatsoever. Here in Australia, we have a floating rate, which is connected to the cash rate. And Mark Burras has openly come out and said, well, it's just stupid. Like, people can hardly afford the cost of living. And then they don't want to spend money, but they have to get punished because they're the one in three people with a mortgage. Why not just change the tax system to create a different GST when there's times of inflation? So if there's time of inflation, instead of a 10% GST, it's a 15% GST. And if wealthy baby boomers want to go to the opera and pay $500 for a ticket or whatever it is, well, now they pay $600. And, you know, because the GST is inputted. Whereas really the way it works now is the people that are punished the most are the people who are going through a mortgage, which again is a great way to rethink a situation. The tax system is central to inequality. The tax system is central to inequality. And again, like, there are literally just 2 million private landlords, and there is obviously them providing properties to the rental market, putting roofs over people's heads, and the political grandstanding around negative gearing to me is not necessarily rethinking the tax system. What is undertaxed in the wrong places is really the better question. And again, if you think about really the tax system is and government is central to inequality, then you've got to look for where things are undertaxed. And probably the biggest example in Australia is one of our natural assets, which is LNG. Now, Australia is the biggest exporter in the world of LNG. We have the most of it. The second biggest is Qatar. Qatar effectively collects 20 times more tax revenue from their LNG than what we do. So there's a problem. Why don't we go fix that problem? Because by creating more tax from a tax system else outside of the fire economy, it allows the Australian government to get off the drug of perhaps the fire system, which is bring more people into the country, sell them more houses, start more coffee shops. And so tax is a major provider for the nation, which is a good thing. You want tax. And arguably, we're under tax. If you go to Sweden, and I lived in Sweden for a period of my life, you know, they have a big personal tax rate. It's one of the heaviest in the world. But medical free. You can go to you get paid to go to university. Here people leave school, go to university, and then create a hex debt. I was at dinner with a lady the other night, Deb, and she, you know, she's probably my age, like sort of mid-40s. She's just paid off her hex debt in her mid-40s. We have an underfunded hospital system. We've got angry people at medical centers, angry receptionists that don't smile. And we've got an underfunded school system where we've got no school teachers. So there are some issues that come with not having the right tax. And of course, we just lowered the personal tax rate, which on a surface level seems great. Oh, great, I'm not paying as much tax. But it creates problems elsewhere. And ultimately, when it comes to the what next for the system, if you want to fix the system, and this is the message I'm trying to explain today, you don't pick on property investors who get $8,000 a year tax relief for providing a roof over someone's head based on that the concept that they're not even a property investor, they're just a property saver. No, you've got to protect that. You've got to look after that. And you can look after that in a sensible way, The first way is to change the tax base. And, you know, I would start by looking at the super profits tax in particularly the LNG system, which will allow Australia more money to expand elsewhere. Then you've got to create other economies. You've got to create industries which are not property-based. You've got to invest in biotech. I mean, CSL is really probably the one industry, one company in Australia which is going in a different direction. And one of the reasons I'm an advocate for certainly what's going on in Melbourne is the big biomedical, you know, companies around the world moving to Melbourne to get into a new industry. And I think that's healthy for Australia. I think that's very, very healthy. Biotech, biomedical. We need more industries. We need our own version of Google. We need our own version of something innovative, right? And, you know, you've got to evolve the country. You've got to change the country. You've got to go from irrelevance to excellence. you know, you think like the Singaporeans, they were like their little place was a little fishing village, and today it's gone from irrelevance to excellence. You think of Dubai, you know, just that image 30 years ago was just a desert, and today it is a completely transformed economy. You know, you've got to hand it to the Emiratis and the Saudis. They know their economy has to remove itself from oil to something else. So they're going from irrelevance to excellence. Australia needs to go from irrelevance to excellence, because at the moment it just lacks a lot of industry. So again, it's either jobs or higher house prices. That's really the two choices at the violent ends of the extreme. But if we actually rethought what's in the middle, then it's all about changing the tax base to lower the burden on the property side of the system, which is the fire economy, without essentially creating a burden on people inside the fire economy. And so it's a tricky thing to do, but that's why people are elected. And, you know, that's what needs to happen. There's a couple of ways I think you could do that, right? Firstly, you change the tax system and you look at where there's tax revenue and you do not collect it or take it out of the real estate economy. You leave that alone. There's plenty of money out there. There's plenty of other ways to use Australia's natural resources for the benefit of local Australians. You've got to then look at the migration system. Now, it's a highly skilled migration system. Again, it's great because we get really smart people coming to Australia. It creates a great professional base. But to be blunt, if you want to create more housing, whether it's social housing, housing that people rent forever, whether it's build to rent, you probably don't need highly skilled people working in the cloud. You need people who can swing a hammer, and you really need to bring a lot more less skilled, which is probably not the fairest word because I think it's highly skilled to be able to build something, but you need a different type of migrant coming into the country. We need the builders back, the people who can build the homes, build the offices, build the industries of tomorrow. We need the builders back. And I think Mark Boris's system makes way more sense than really the current system, which is just linked to changing the cash rate, which basically affects young families who've got a couple of kids and a mortgage, like pushing the interest rate up and down on them. You know, again, could be fairer done by changing the system, change the tax system. And of course, you can fix the way demand and supply works if you want in Australia. I think that it is very difficult because of the wealth effect creation over the last 40 years to go back and say to people, right, we're going to create a free market. Your house price could be worth half next week. I don't think that's the way to go. I think that you've got to go, okay, what is the next layer of this? And the next layer of this, you know, effectively could be, for example, what they've done in Canada, which is 40-year home loans. You just spread out the debt and you get people buying the houses and doing the system all over again. But you don't pull that trigger until you change your tax system and you create more industries that are less reliant on really the idea of fire economics. And so, again, you could come up with all sorts of ways to create more homes. I'm a big advocate in the idea that you trade in and trade up. You know, there's 2 million property investors, Many of them have a capital gains liability and won't sell their real estate because of the capital gains lock, which has been created. If you said to those property investors, as long as you buy a property again in 12 months, if you trade in, you can avoid capital gains tax. You would see one property come back to market and one new property absorbed from the market. You could say that the absorption has to come from new construction supply. So you create one new property, you sell one property, two properties are created by one property investor, creates two roofs over people's heads. So instead of punishing the property investors, even though this talk has come from, you know, a very small section of the political class being the Greens, you should be really thinking about, okay, property investors are the way to get out of this jam, actually inspire them to invest in more property. And, in doing so, the way forward is we just set a new bar. The new bar is change the tax base around Australia, how things are taxed, particularly outside of the property economy and the personal tax rate economy. Secondly, you've got to get more investment capital. A fund needs to be created to start more industries, which lowers the reliance upon the fire economy. Thirdly, when you're ready to go, you fix the fire economy by restarting what debt looks like over a 40-year period. And, you can even create more supply if you need to through a trade-in, trade-up strategy. So that would fix the problem, but really the idea of, just pointing the finger and, demonizing property savers who aren't even property investors, I just think it's a little bit, the old raw prawn. All right. Well, hopefully that made a lot of sense. I'm going to continue to invest in real estate. I think it's the asset class to be part of. I think the future of real estate is going to be very undersupplied. And I do think actually being a landlord is going to be rewarded because there will be more tenants. There's going to be less property. And pretty much everything I just said won't happen. And we'll probably continue down our merry way of the same system. But hey, maybe someone likes my idea to fix Australia's housing solution. All right, folks, take care. All the best.
Thanks for tuning in to the Urban Property Investor. To never miss an episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app or on YouTube. And I would love it if you could give the show a rating and share it with your friends and family. In between episodes, you can always keep in touch with me by connecting on social media over Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Until we meet again on the next episode of the Urban Property Investor, take care and bye for now.